Again, please. How can we do anything infinitely? We're finite. We can love Krishna without restriction. Representatives of Krishna who deliver Krishna's mercy, then it's possible. Prabhupada comments that Kunti has as her family members pure devotees, Yadus and the Pandavas. Still, there is material portion of affinity from Kunti's side due to relation of the skin, bodily relation. So it's possible, as Kunti did, to have that material portion removed and have just the spiritual portion remaining. It's just like, you know, we're spirit souls within this body. Is it possible to become fully spiritually realized? The answer is yes. Generally, our condition is something of a mix, isn't it? We acknowledge that we're spiritual, we're spirit souls, but we don't fully live our lives in that way. Hardly. So is it possible to become fully spiritually realized? Yes, by descending mercy. And descending mercy must be accompanied by, the lesson of Kunti is, by this sanatha, shelter-taking, exclusive shelter-taking in Krishna. That is possible. We have to want that. Very, very strongly. And our practices of sadhana bhakti are meant to awaken and further strengthen that desire. Did you hear? Our sadhana practices are meant to awaken and then further strengthen that desire for Krishna's shelter, our relationship with Krishna. Acharyas on that one, so I cannot say. And Krishna appears in that time. It's specifically orchestrated so that this proceeds just before the 10th canto begins. Do you recall reading anything why that?
I hadn't talked to anything.
Maybe in the commentary by our acharyas, it's there somewhere. I've not heard. One can assume this is like inductive, not descending. But one can assume that Krishna saw something special in his devotion. Perhaps some particular affection for Krishna. And so reciprocating. It's not to say that therefore one is more glorious than the other, but Krishna gave his special mercy. In some way, because of the shelter-taking devotion of King Yadu. Others? You had your hand up again? Yes. Just a rule of thumb. When we're governed by the intelligence, we can understand we have limited capacity, so we need to take shelter of a higher capacity. That's governed by the intelligence. And generally, we don't do that. Of attractions and repulsions are feelings towards things and events. So, generally speaking, we're in that reactive mind position, accepting and rejecting based on I like, I don't like. Intelligence then becomes the servant of the mind. The mind dictates, I want. Can you arrange? Yes, sir. I will arrange. I may have to go to school for some time to figure out how to arrange, but I will arrange. And the mind rules. Intelligence is active, that the discriminating factor of the intelligence is there, but in service to the dictates of the mind. Therefore, even when it comes to trying to understand subject matters, it's called mental speculation, not intellectual evaluation. Mental speculation, Muni. These were supposed to do domestic work only. Is that what Draupadi did? As the queen? She did domestic work only? Who wrote this one? Someone write this one. You wrote this one? In the what? Huh?
In Mario's item 4:10, just the Andhari Sutta. But she's saying that according to Lord Krishna, ladies are not allowed. They must be domestic work.
Domestic work only. As opposed to in the office wearing pants, huh?
See, I understand that ladies should be domestic work. But I have told her that in modern age, we must do some work.
It's not that we must do either one. It's not that we must go to the office or we must do only domestic work. There's no must in either case. We must be Krishna conscious. These inflexible things are must be this or must be that. It's not. More practical is to consider the individual and what will be beneficial for the individual to become purified. It may be beneficial for the individual to be in the protection of a domestic situation and not be exposed to the nastiness, the lustiness, the greediness, the passions of the work environment in our modern situation. It may be best for someone, for a lady, to not be exposed to that. On the other hand, it may be what's needed, given, as you're indicating, that we're in a different times than the Vedic times, and people are brought up this way and that way and the other way, and so get with it. This is the modern time. So it's not. It may be that someone has become influenced, and have that psychophysical nature, that they need some activity. And I would say it's an individual consideration. There's, just for example, there's one young couple in America, born and educated in South India, now living in America. The husband is working and the wife is home alone. She doesn't have a child. And for a number of years, she's just been engaged in domestic work. But there's no child. So Krishna hasn't made that arrangement. It's good. So they've together made the decision, although the wife is inclined to staying in that protected home situation, she understands it will be good for her to. So she's taking steps to do something that is suited to her nature and suited to a gentle woman, to learn to teach young children in an academic environment. But it's the second choice. The first choice is the other. And she's happy in that situation. But until children come, it's not sufficient engagement for her. She's not properly engaged in service. So this other situation will be taken up, and whatever skills she learns will be useful when children come, if Krishna makes that arrangement. In response to what you've written, it's not that. I mean, what did Draupadi do in the royal palace? She was like the palace commander. She kept the accounts and she ran a tight ship. It's not like she didn't have assistants that she could hand things off to, but she was on top of it. But that was under the protection of her husband's. In the royal palace. She was a Vedic lady. Very, very chaste. Very proper. And very intense. It's more an individual case than it is blanket rule, Vedic times, modern times. It's the individual. And it is more Vedic if the wife is not, by her nature or some other circumstance, require some occupational work. That's more ideal. But it requires an individual by individual consideration. And the more you stray from the ideal, the more you're going to run into problems. And say, well, it's the modern times, there's lots of problems. The reason there's lots of problems is because we strayed from the Vedic model. Unlimited anarthas in her heart. Oh, you want to translate? Yeah. And we take patience, understanding that we are practicing devotional service. That as we are practicing devotional service, they will gradually go away. Anarthas are there, they go away gradually through devotional service. But some particular anartha gives great trouble. Like anartha related to fundamental aspect of our Krishna consciousness. Then what should we do? What to do? To make ourselves stable, and how to deal with that situation, because whenever it comes out, whole peace of the mind goes away. That's P-E-A-C-E. Peace of mind. Not P-I-E-C-E. Peace of mind. Principles that I've understood from devotional service, a practical principle in devotional service, is that you should operate from a position of strength. So you take an inventory of your own Krishna consciousness. And what are the things that give you strength? Maybe it's chanting. Maybe it's reading. Maybe it's praying. Maybe it's deity worship. Maybe it's kirtan. Maybe it's whatever it is. There's some things that give you strength. Give a lot of attention to those things that give you strength. Invest consciousness there. Number one. Then there's some other things that they're not in proper order. Address those things selectively from a position of strength. And choose ones that, as you've indicated, they're fundamental core principles. Select judiciously, and then from the position of strength, focus on that. And focus on it. Focus on it. Just keep consistently, steadfastly, with great determination, focusing on that particular thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls this, what do you call it? He doesn't call it anartha nirvritti, he calls it removal of bad habits or something like that. He's written it in Amnaya Tattva. It's a principle. He describes in there that it may take many lifetimes to remove bad habits, the full range of bad habits. He writes there that it may take, you should allow 5 years for removal of a particular bad habit. I mean, it might take less, it might take more, but that's what he's indicating. He's indicating patience, but perseverance. With enthusiasm. What do we find Prabhupada writing as a definition of enthusiasm? Something about intelligence. You know the statement from Nectar of Instruction? Huh? Exactly. Yeah, that's called enthusiasm. So we just described it. Making some, this is intelligence. You're questioning what's intelligence and what's mind. This is not reactive, this is analytical. With intelligence, I can discriminate where is strength and where is weakness. Now let me endeavor according to what I need to make more strong from a position that gives strength. That's enthusiasm. And be patient. But have great confidence. It will prevail. Krishna will make the arrangement. Krishna will recognize that sincere effort. And that weakness can be overcome. The bad habit can be overcome. And put in its place a good habit. Especially core, fundamental ones. Don't take too many. Then you'll be splayed out. Be very focused. Take one that you know is important. And if I can become a little more accomplished in this one, it will help me all across the board in life. And then go for it from a position of strength. That's my recommendation. The papers are coming forward. The actual meaning of humility, how can we remain humble in all circumstances? How to? I addressed this a little bit already. Humble, you asked the question, distinction between humble and pride, humility and prideless. So, humble has to do with how you think of yourself. And actual meaning of humility is to have a spiritual conception of self. A material conception of humility is to tremble and cower and shy away and be that kind of humble. That's a material conception of humble. A spiritual conception of humble is what real humble is. That is, my real identity is spirit soul. Now, how can remain humble in all circumstances? I'll give a little Prabhupada story. This is actually, I heard this story from Brahmananda, and then later on I heard that Prabhupada gave the same example in Los Angeles to another devotee. So this is at least semi-standard answer that Prabhupada gave in the how-to department. Prabhupada was, there was a morning walk, and several devotees with Prabhupada in Manhattan, and at the time, Brahmananda was the temple president of our only temple in America at the time. Prabhupada had gone to Boston to start another center, but Brahmananda was the temple president in New York. And so he asked Prabhupada, I do all these things and I have so much authority and I'm respected by so many persons. How can I remain humble? And Prabhupada gave the following answer. Prabhupada said that in the vastness of the spiritual sky, there are unlimited spiritual planets, chief most of which is Krishna Loka. And in that Krishna Loka is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. In that vastness of the spiritual sky, there's one portion of that sky that's covered by a cloud that's called the Mahatattva. Within that Mahatattva, Mahavishnu is lying, and Mahavishnu expands from his body unlimited numbers of universes. And in each of those unlimited numbers of universes, he expands as one Garbhodakshay Vishnu. And in that universe, there are unlimited numbers of planets. And one of those planets is this planet Earth. And in this planet Earth, there are seven continents, one of which is North America. In that North America, there is many states. One of those states is New York State. In one of those states, there's one city called New York City. In that city called New York, there's one street, one part of New York City called Manhattan. In Manhattan, there's one street called Second Avenue. On that Second Avenue, there's four people standing here wondering how to think of oneself as very humble. If you understand your literal insignificance in the totality of existence, it's very easy to be humble. You just think of Krishna. How tiny you are in relation to the unlimited position of Krishna. That's what the spiritual conception is. In relation to Krishna, we're angsa, just a spark. You can take this one. If there's a lack of required willingness strengthen my relationship with particular devotees due to my way of perceiving the things of material conceptions. I guess this is a statement, not if. There is a lack of required willingness to strengthen my relationships due to my way of perceiving things and material conceptions. To some extent, I agree with others that relationships are required for my growth. Sometimes I try, but I fail. Seeing my weakness, I stop putting efforts. What should I do? What to do? Well, like anything, if you see there's value in something, if at first you fail, you try and try again. Something that you value, you continue to try. And is it a natural position to be without relationships, or is it a natural position to be with relationships? it's natural to be with relationships. If there's something that's interfering with those relationships, that's unnatural, and then you continue to move, just like this example of walking. The child that learns to walk, some steps and they fall and they get up, and some steps and they fall, and some steps and they fall. So, and again, the principle of operating from a position of strength. Find those things that give you strength, that inspire you in Krishna consciousness, and then apply that strength to this area of improving relationships. Same type of question. Is his life career more important, or attachment to Lord Krishna is more important? The answer is, you shouldn't have a secular view. So this is for Krishna, and this is for me. Krishna indicates in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, everyone must perform some type of work. You want to separate what you must do from yourself. That's a fundamental mistake. You have your spirit soul, and you're within a body. So the body is animated. It must do some type of work. So your relationship with Krishna is the soul to Krishna, and the work is what you offer to Krishna. Don't separate the two, because it's an artificial separation. What's needed is to learn how to dedicate your work to Krishna. Then there's no separation. Problem just disappeared. But there is an unknown fear that I may not be able to pursue Krishna consciousness forever. This might be to various reasons, such as maybe I might not be able to lead such a disciplined life forever. What if I am not able to follow the instructions of my teacher from whom I have received so much? Which is like Arjuna's question of taking up spiritual life and don't complete it. And then are you not, no, you're no longer in material life and you're no longer in spiritual life. You're nowhere. It's not a new fear. Arjuna has similar fear. Or doubt. A better word is doubt. Maybe fear. Where that fear comes from is everything rests upon our relationship with Krishna, or our attitude toward Krishna. And we're here in this material world because we got a bad attitude toward Krishna. Yeah, like, I want to be away from Krishna attitude. And so we're here. And so trying to restore our Krishna consciousness, that attitude toward Krishna problem is still there. It's just tendency. It's residual tendency of lifetimes of going away from Krishna. So there is no, one answer to this is there is no certainty that forever or even for the rest of our life we'll be moving towards Krishna. That's the healthy condition. And whether I'll remain moving in a healthy direction or not, there's no guarantee. But while I have my wits about me, I certainly want to go in the right direction. And so I can move with boldness and confidence, but then I can also take some provisions to stay on that course, like good association, like carefully following the standards that will give protection and insulation from Maya, like carefully performing daily devotional activity, chanting, refraining from the sinful activities. And that, yes, that's a disciplined life, but that's a protected life. Leave aside the disciplined life, immediately you have an unprotected life. If you want some fear, then stop following the standard practices. You have more fear. You'll be jump in the soup. Take protection. Krishna is extending that through his devotees. Take his hand, walk with him, and feel the reassuring comfort of having Krishna's protection. And the more steps you take, the easier it is to maintain that position of being in Krishna's care and Krishna's protection. That's the higher position. From our present position, Prabhupada explained, we should want to go back to Godhead. We should see this material world as a very dangerous place, not fit for a gentleman, and want to be with Krishna. In our present position, that's preferred. As we become more and more and more in contact, the Krishna connection is stronger, stronger, then this more elevated, more mature stage will manifest itself naturally. When someone has that, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has, their concern is not back to Godhead, because they're already back to Godhead. Wherever they are, Krishna is with them. And wherever Krishna is, that's where they are. So they're already back to Godhead. So all they want is service. And if Krishna wants me to serve him, this place, that place, the next place, the other place, that's a very elevated position. That is what back to God. So back to Godhead means that consciousness.
Services which can be offered to Krishna. So my question is, at a given time, how should we gauge whether we are doing devotional service to best of our capacity? Is the check whether we are mentally exhausted or physically exhausted? How can we gauge whether we are doing devotional service to best of our capacity.
I'm not sure I understand your question, because best of your measure, what you just, the options that you've given me are the options of this kind of exhaustion or that. So best capacity isn't determined by when you get exhausted. Best capacity is when you're becoming Krishna conscious and simultaneously you become an agent, a touchstone agent that transforms others to Krishna consciousness. That's to your best capacity. Exhaustion is not a criterion. When your desire becomes the desire to please Guru and Krishna, that's your best capacity. Not physical or mental exertion.
Prayed to Krishna to appear. So it shows that he, Brahma, was knowing the appearance of Krishna. So in the pastime of Krishna, how he has done mistake to stolen the cow.
In the pastime of Krishna, how what?
He had stolen the cows and cowherd boys. So how he has done this mistake something.
Became angry at the question. So I want to be careful in my response here. The question that was asked that I heard Prabhupada get angry at, the question was, Prabhupada, Lord Brahma is the preceptor of our sampradaya. Lord Brahma is the original receiver of Vedic knowledge, and he's considered to be the most intelligent and learned person in all of creation. How can we understand that Brahma did this? That he's perfect? And Prabhupada's answer in an angry tone was, he is perfect enough. No, it wasn't asked in a challenging spirit, but apichet sudharajaro bhajate mam ananyabhak sadureva samantavya. When we think of Lord Brahma, we should think of bhajate mam ananyabhak, because that's Brahma. And some durachar is not characteristic of Brahma. So how is that possible? Because he's a tiny living being in the ocean of the material energy. And it's possible. Because he's tiny. I mean, material energy is oceanically great. Prabhupada's specific example was, sometimes a tidal wave comes. Normally, it's the tide comes and it goes and it comes and it goes and it comes and it goes, and sometimes there's a big tidal wave. And when the tidal wave recedes, it's back to the normal position. But sometimes, even a great soul may succumb to the influence of an exceptional influence of the Lord's external energy. And then when that recedes, it's because his Vajate Mama Nanya Bhak, he's back to Vajate Mama Nanya Bhak, even though there's some Durachar. Because the material energy is very strong and he's very tiny. Even he's Lord Brahma. So how do we think of Lord Brahma? Sadhu. So Krishna thinks of him. So we better not think differently. Not to say that you but you were thinking differently, but that's how we should think. That we've been sitting here together, you've gained some further appreciation of Queen Kunti and some deeper appreciation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. These prayers are very famous prayers. Even people that don't know so much about Srimad Bhagavatam, they know about the prayers of Queen Kunti. They're very prominent. And there's a reason why the message is very, very powerful, very potent, very pertinent, very moving. And hopefully some of the messages that Kunti has expressed have made some impression in your heart, and you'll carry them as ways to help guide you further on your path of spiritual progress. And thank you for joining in this exercise here. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.